Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
We did it. I still can't believe we got this project done so fast and so well.
When I'm in New York,
I'm in Chicago,
and I'm in LA, but
we're making it happen in Miro.
Together.
Our best work just happens faster on Miro's collaborative online whiteboard. No more scheduling meeting after meeting for work that could happen
from anywhere. Whether it's getting design feedback here,
mapping timelines here,
or brainstorming next steps here. It all just happens on the Miro board.
Exactly. And it's nice not having to wait an entire day to get sign-off from this guy.
Hey! Well, it is true.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com. The first three boards are free forever. That's Miro.com.
Everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the
Geek
Buddies. Hey! We're back at it this week to talk about another week of geeky goodness here for you on the Geek Buddies and on the Outlaw Nation. Let's introduce ourselves and go around the horn real quick. I'm the Outlaw John Roker, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies and the Outlaw Nation. Mike.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies, such as Strawberry Shortcake, which you can currently see on YouTube and on Netflix. And I will not be on Geek Buddies next week because I will be half naked in the desert running around like a wild animal because I am going to Burning Man.
Well, it's nice of him to tell us on the show live. That's appreciate that. Thanks, Mike.
You Shannon. Knew that already.
This is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor where you will be able to see me next week because I will not be in the desert half naked running around like a wild animal. I'll be right here with John Roca talking about all the latest and greatest in geeky news.
There you go. There you go. And of course, much love to Carbon Health, who continues to sponsor us here on the Geek Buddies. We love Carbon Health. Go to carbonhealth.com to get any questions, concerns about your healthcare addressed. They love creating healthcare plans specifically for you. And look, we're getting the numbers. You know, the numbers are going up. People are getting tested. People are getting COVID. Just got a good friend get COVID for the first time in 2.5 years. So it's still out there for people to get. So you want to get tested, you want to get squared away. Go to Carbon Health and get taken care of with that. And, of course, all your other healthcare needs as well. 100-plus locations all over the country, 80 locations in California alone. Or if you want to use their app, download their app for Carbon Health, Jacob, so you can have a doc in your POC. All right, let's get into our show here. The way it works is each of us brings up a geek news item, and then we talk about a main topic here. And our main topic is going to be our spoiler review for episode one of The House of the Dragon, the new Game of Thrones series on HBO Max. We're going to take breaks in between the topics as well to kind of adhere to our new podcast feed there on iHeartRadio. If you haven't subscribed to us,
iHeartRadio.
That's what I said. iHeartRadio. Kaboom. What? Kaboom. But Mike, start us off. What do we got?
Well, here's what we got. Why is HBO Max a dumpster fire? That is what we have got. It was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. It feels like, I don't know what it was, where we were wrapping up our show and we got the news about Batgirl just being completely wiped off the face of the earth. And we were shocked and we were appalled and we were confused and we were wondering why this was. And it seemed like maybe it was an isolated incident, but it was certainly not an isolated incident. It was just the tip of the shit show iceberg, because HBO Max has been just going nonstop and David Zaslav is trying to cut corners everywhere he can, and the result is everything that we were excited about with HBO Max is going away. In fact, this Yahoo headline today, or from this week, HBO Max is treating animation fans and creators like hot burning garbage, is the headline of the article. And it actually starts off, I think this is actually important to kind of say, it's like, it is telling that when trying to analyze the current PR and talent disasters surrounding HBO Max, you have to start by getting specific about which disaster you actually mean. Are you talking about Batgirl? Are you talking about the numerous layoffs? Are you talking about them taking episodes of Sesame Street off of HBO Max when they said when they got Sesame Street that they were going to treat it as sacrosanct? Or are you talking about the fact that they seem to be canceling pretty much every animated show that they've got in development and half the time not even telling the creators who are finding out in articles like Yahoo or on Twitter? So it is just a epic disaster. I mean, the latest victim of this is the animated Batman series that was going to come to us from Bruce Timm and J.J. Abrams, which was sort of a spiritual sequel to Batman the Animated Series, aka one of the greatest animated series ever made. And, you know, somebody on Twitter said this: if you can't get a Batman animated series on the streamer where Batman is supposed to be one of the biggest things that they've got, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look, there's no new information. I mean, we know why it's happening. We know Zaslav is tasked with cutting like $300 billion before this entire Discovery Warner's merger happens. But the way that he's doing it certainly seems to be penny-wise and pound-foolish, because when you have all of these amazing brands, when you have all these great animated series, that Scooby-Doo movie that was already pretty much completed, obviously Batgirl, Batman, all these other things, this really doesn't seem like you're looking at the long haul. Whatever his plans are, whatever his future is for HBO Max in whatever form it's going to take, it certainly doesn't seem like it's what HBO Max promised when it launched. So, Gentlemen, it is a dumpster fire. What do you think about it?
Shannon, remember when it was a big happy family? Remember when it was a big happy family? And we start putting X's on a lot of those things that are on there. So what do you think about what Michael's talking about and about the HBO Max being a bit of a dumpster fire? Hot garbage, as Yahoo said.
I mean, you know, they say that Zaslav has a this is the long game, that he's playing a big plan. And at the beginning, we're getting a lot of disappointing news. I mean, what's funny is, you know, the announcement that this show is not going to HBO Max, that it might still end up someplace, and that apparently folks are saying they are confident that it will end up someplace. It just definitely won't be on HBO Max.
Yeah.
Because right after this, you know, word came out that Matt Reeves had signed, you know, an overall deal with Warner Brothers.
Right.
Basically saying they're all in on him, unless it's this Batman animated series.
Yeah, which is,
you know, it's disappointing. Because I think everyone was excited to see what a spiritual successor to the Batman the Animated Series looked like. I mean, you have you know, a lot of talent that is involved with Bruce Timm, with Matt Reeves, with J.J. Abrams. But, I mean, is this similar to Batgirl, where people are saying, like, it was coming out, it didn't look that good, so we just decided to cut bait? Yeah. Or is it just they're trying to save money? And if it's... neither situation is great. If it's just the second one, it's a real shame, because it seems like at this point you are alienating the audience that is going to support your product and uplift your product. And at this point, you know, at least on Twitter, which is always a reliable source of information, people are right and left saying, "All right, I'm out on HBO Max. I'm out on HBO Max." I mean, you still have some really, really great programming on there, but I mean, it's disappearing. It seems every hour. So yeah, it's disappointing. But fingers crossed, it will end up someplace.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to cut $3 billion worth of costs at this point. The company slashed 14% last week of its HBO Max workforce. As Michael mentioned, the layoffs that's connected to that, they said those were inevitable, but that's what they're looking at here. And according to the on the company's earnings call, Zaslav said they'll be cutting back even more of the HBO Max original content a few weeks ago. And they reported, the media giant in HBO Max Discovery reported, that they had a $3.42 billion loss in the second quarter. And that is partly due to some of the obstacles in the recent merger, but only partly due to that. And now they expect their adjusted EBITDA, I think that's how you say that, to come in between $9 billion and $9.5 billion, which is a decline from the $10 billion they had anticipated originally. And they're hoping to, and it could be, they're cutting it to maybe 12 billion to 14 billion for 2023. So we shall see when you're looking at it. But Warner Brothers Discovery stock is also down right now about 50% from last year. So that speaks volumes as well. And I was reading an article kind of breaking down how these canceling of the projects are really damaging the HBO Max brand, damaging the confidence viewers have with this. And in the end, it could be the worst strategy ever because, great, you've got your vision going, David Zaslav. The problem is half the people who you were hoping would be there to see it don't want to see it because you've kind of burnt the bridges here with viewers, burnt them with projects that with creators they care about, like Bruce Timm, like J.J. Abrams. You've kind of smoked them. And by doing that, in the end, you've ruined confidence in your product and confidence with the fans. And I think that's where the danger is going to lie. Yep. And to me, because I'm a sports guy, this is very correlative to what new owners sometimes come in and do to teams. They just sell their big people because they want to recoup that money and start all over again. The problem is it rarely works out, the rebuilding project. It rarely works out. And 5 years down the road, that GM and that owner have sold the team or been fired. So there's a real possibility here that Zaslav does all these radical changes. And in 4 or 5 years' time, when these films don't do well or they're not well received, we're looking at a whole new person coming in and starting all over again. Yeah. And I don't think he's done, Mike, going back to you to get the last word on this. I don't think he's done because, as I tweeted you guys off camera, I think Michael Keaton is on board next to be reduced, if not completely taken out of the Flash movie. There's a real possibility he's out. There's no Batgirl. His scenes have been reshot in Aquaman too, and it could be for consistency's sake or chronological sake. It seems a little weird. And then boom, here we'll see what happens with him saying he wanted to make the Flash an even better movie. It could be the moving out of Michael Keaton. He wants to go and restore possibly the Snyderverse without Snyder. There are rumors over the weekend that James Gunn has been in these quiet talks with Zaslav to come in and take over and do a Justice League sequel with the Snyderverse Justice League. That could be insane, Mike. So we might not be done with the flaming hot garbage of HBO Max.
Listen, right now, in my mind, Zaslav is just standing on top of a bunch of movie reels in a bathrobe, smoking a cigarette with a giant thing of gasoline in his hand. That's what I'm picturing in my head. But look, to your point about sports, because I don't know anything about sports, but I do know a lot about Disney. And as anybody who listens to the show knows, I'm a huge Disney nerd. And really, if you just compare a couple things here, Bob Iger in his day spent, I don't remember how much money exactly, maybe you guys remember, how much he spent buying Star Wars and how much he spent buying Marvel. Do you remember the numbers?
$4 billion for Star Wars, for sure. I don't remember Star Wars.
It was...
Star Wars
was
more.
Marvel. Yeah. I don't remember Marvel. Sorry.
It was a lot of quarters. There was a lot of quarters that he spent on those two things. But he spent a massive amount of money, and everybody was like, oh shit, is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? But now you look at the money that Disney is raking in between the Star Wars franchise and the Marvel franchise, and you go, well, obviously that was brilliant, but at the time you had to spend a lot of money to make money. Similarly, when Disney and 20th Century Fox, 20th Century Studios merged, you know, obviously there were layoffs. Obviously, a merger is never going to go great for anybody. But when you compare how that merger went to how this current merger is going, you see, like, there is a way to do these things where you look at what you've got and you say, look, let's not just slash everything. Let's look at what the gold is here. Everybody, we talked about this on our Prey review. Everybody thought Disney was going to bury things like Predator. And now you look at Prey on Hulu and you see how that's doing. And you just see that, like, there is a way to look at your library, to look at your brands and say, okay, look, I know that I'm tasked with trying to cut down costs, and I know that they're, you know, that's hard for anybody to have to figure out how to do. It's not anything I would envy anybody having to figure out. But when you look at the brands that they have and you look at the brand potential that things like this Batman animated series and some of these other things had, and you look at the way that they are just slashing things wantonly, it's not smart. So to John's point about coaches in sports ball, same thing happens in entertainment. Like, you come in, you slash your star players, you get rid of everything. You know, you bring these people on the bench that don't have any experience in and say, hey, do something cheap for us. It's not going to work. Like, you actually need to have those big things to make the money up in the future, and it's just not going to happen. So I think John is right. I think Zaslav's going to come in, completely like demolish everything. And in a couple years, when HBO Max is in the toilet and there's no brand confidence in any of the Warner Brothers brands, somebody else is going to come in and they're going to be tasked with turning it all around. And it is not going to be an easy job.
It's a great point you make there. Brand confidence. I think that's an essential part of our discussion for sure. Star Wars, $4.05 billion is what they paid for. Marvel, $4 billion. So a lot of quarters for sure. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll jump into our next topic right after this.
I like the delay.
I couldn't remember what we were doing.
What's the next topic?
Let's jump into it because I know we got limited time here. I wanted to talk about this today because this was a fantastic interview that John Boyega had with John Fugelsang. Remember John Fugelsang? He was the first co-host with Ryan Seacrest there of American Idol in the first season. Well, he's got a SiriusXM show called Tell Me Everything with John Fugelsang. And he was talking with John Boyega because John Boyega has a new film coming out called Breaking, which looks fantastic. And he asked him about being a part of the Star Wars franchise and whether he's going to come back as Finn. And there are two things I want to bring up for you guys to give me your opinions on. As far as Finn coming back as Finn in Star Wars, he said, at this point, I'm cool off of it. I'm good off it. I think Finn is at a good confirmation point where you can just enjoy him in other things, the games, the animation. But I feel episode 7 to episode 9 was good for me. And then he was asked about this idea of what happened with his experience, the racist abuse he suffered. And he said, the reason I don't want to go back to Star Wars right now in my life, to be fair, with the allies that I found with Joel Taylor and Jamie Foxx, Taylor Paris, Viola Davis, all these people I've been working with, versatility is my path. He's very incredibly well laid out his reasons for all the things that he's doing here. And as far as Moses Ingram, Fugelsang asked him, you know, well, you went through this racist abuse. Like, is this a part of him? Is this an element? And he said, well, watching how Star Wars reacted to protect Moses Ingram, that made me feel protected. He said, do you understand what I'm saying? It makes me feel like, okay, cool. I am not the elephant in the room, because when I started, it wasn't really a conversation you can bring up. You know how they went through it. It was kind of like, let's just be silent. It wasn't a conversation you could bring up. But now, to see how blatant it is, to see Ewan McGregor's come and support for me, it fulfills my time where I didn't get the support. And he mentioned that he was like, his dad told him, sometimes you're the person who has to go through the wall first so that other people can benefit, and he's okay with it. So, gentlemen, you guys, what do you think about this? Do you him saying right now he's off it, does that mean there's still possibilities down the road? And what do you think about how he answered these questions about the Moses Ingram situation and about where he's at in his life when it comes to Finn?
I mean, he took a very... He had a very classy response.
Yeah.
That, as you know, relaying that story that his father told him, is that sometimes you're literally Moses. Like, you get to see the promised land, but you don't get to enter it. And so he kind of did some of that hard work.
Yeah.
So the future of, you know, Star Wars cast members who happen to be people of color, that they will have the support of the studio, that they will have the support of their co-stars. And as far as him not wanting to come back to Finn, I mean, you look at the things that he has on the horizon right now, and, you know, Star Wars probably isn't on his mind. He probably said bye to it at the end of episode 9 because it was not the smoothest experience, you know, shooting the trilogy for him. And now he's getting to work on some very, very exciting projects. But as you said, John, that's not to say that he won't come back in the future. I mean, where he is right now, he's good off of it. But in the future, if these projects turn out to be as successful as I think he's hoping they will be, I mean, he can come back to the Star Wars table and have probably a little more input into what could happen. So, like, at this point, I wouldn't expect to see Finn, Daisy Ridley, Oscar Isaac. I wouldn't expect them to see them anytime soon. In the next few years, at least. I mean, I think you get around 5 years, 10 years down the road, I think that is a situation where, you know, we could see Rey Skywalker again. We could see Finn again. We could see Poe Dameron again. It's just not in the forefront of his mind right now. And again, I mean, it was I read the article, but then I watched the interview, and you know, it was a great interview. I mean, again, he had a very mature, classy response to the questions.
Yeah. Very much seemed unbothered at this point in his life, he's gone through it and he's got more perspective on it, you know? And Mike, what do you think about this? I mean, is there a future where we do a Finn series that doesn't have Rey or Poe Dameron, written by a black creator, directed by a black director, show running it all? Do you think that's a possibility to kind of explore Finn's experience, a black point of view in Star Wars, fully through Finn's eyes?
Yeah, I mean, like, that would be great. I mean, that would be awesome. And I think there's absolutely that possibility. I mean, I think in the long run, I mean, John Boyega's in a great spot. Yeah. John Boyega, Star Wars needs John Boyega more than John Boyega needs Star Wars. John Boyega's doing just fine right now. Like, that movie that he has coming out looks fantastic.
Yeah.
He is killing it. You know, he really, I mean, he's spoken about this in the past. There, he had that moment where he thought that if he spoke out, if he really spoke his mind about his Star Wars experience, he was going to get, you know, like, run out of the industry. People weren't going to hire him. And he had all those, you know, Jamie Foxx and all these guys that, and Viola Davis that came to his support, said, we want to work with you. And he's really doing great, great work. He's an amazing actor. And look, whether you like the new trilogy or you don't like the new trilogy, the proof is in the pudding with these actors. It is pretty clear that none of them had the best experience making these movies. They were all so excited to be in the new Star Wars, and then the experience did not necessarily pan out for them. And you see that Daisy Ridley is probably the most politically savvy about it, but like Oscar Isaac made his opinions clear. John Boyega's made his opinions clear. You've heard this from other people. So I think it's smart of him. I think it's, he's definitely in a place where he doesn't need it. I think it's smart of him to say right now, very PR, savvy words to say, look, right now I don't want to, because right now doesn't mean never. Right now doesn't mean you're burning a bridge. And look, I think that as a nerd, as a fan, even though, as I've said in the past, like, the, you know, the new trilogy is kind of all over the place, not my favorite, I think these characters have so much potential.
Yeah.
I think I will give J.J. Abrams a lot of credit in that, despite the fact that things kind of went all over the place between the tennis match of him and Rian Johnson, Rey, Finn, and Poe are all potentially great characters. Maybe they never fully reached that full potential in the trilogy, but listen, if down the road, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we all go see a big Star Wars movie and the opening shot is Rey and Finn running into some situation, lightsabers blazing and Jedi-ing all over the place, there's not a single person listening right now that wouldn't lose their goddamn mind. Like, we would love it. Yeah. So, you know, I hope he comes back to it, but I think it's great that he doesn't need to. And I do think, to Shannon's point, it really is one of those great moments where you go, look, somebody spoke their mind, spoke their truth, and said, I don't care if this is going to get me in trouble. It needs to be said. And because of that, Star Wars has shifted how they treat their actors of color when things happen on social media that we all wish didn't happen, but they do. And to your point, John, I think it does push Star Wars in a place, much like Marvel is doing with Sam Wilson, even with the new She-Hulk series in some ways, where they're taking their characters and actually having those characters speak about what it's like to be a person of color, what it's like to be a woman, like what it's like to be these different things. So I think Star Wars could use a healthy dose of that. And I would love it if John Boyega is one of the people that blazed that trail.
Yeah, I think so. We're going to see with Breaking, we're going to see with The Woman King. You know, I think people are going to open their eyes to see what John Boyega can really bring to the table as an actor. And certainly I think by the end, it's going to be, he's going to be in a lot more of an advantageous position to negotiate if they want to bring him back, a richer role, a richer written role, and a richer journey for Finn to go on if he's to come back to Star Wars. And I think that's a good thing for him and for all of us to enjoy or re-enjoy this character again in a different way. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll jump into our next topic right after this.
Do 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 do.
That was quick. I like that.
Do 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 do.
Because you know when he messed up on the first one, he was like, "God damn it! What's that next topic? I gotta have it ready." He thought through it. He was ready with it that time.
You know what? I'm not gonna lie. Did I think about all of this beforehand? Yes. There was just that moment where I forgot which one was coming next.
Take us away, Shannon. What do we got?
So just recently we got the final trailer for Amazon Prime's The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. So it seems like we have been getting a lot of trailers for this. They are really, really hyping this up. They also just announced that on August 31st, they're actually going to screen the first two episodes on the big screen at your local Cinemark theater. We don't have a ton of those in LA, but if you have a Cinemark theater, it's one night only. They're going to be screening the first two episodes. So we get this new trailer and really, really focused on Galadriel and what it seems like is sort of a forming of a before fellowship. So it seems like they're definitely sticking with what has worked for the property in the past. We get some dwarf characters. We get some human characters. We get some elf characters, obviously with Galadriel. The scope of this show looks huge. It looks great. So, gentlemen, what did you think of our potentially final look of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, before it debuts?
Mike?
I watched the trailer with my brother, and we both pretty much had the same reaction when we got done. Said, whoa, I have no fucking idea what's going on, but I'm in. Like, there's so many characters. They're all over the place. They're in the snow. They're in the water. There is a battle in a field. I don't know. Galadriel's killing some things. Things are going down. I have no idea what's going on, but I'm in. I'm sold. Take me to Middle Earth. Like, I think focusing on Galadriel is, I was thinking about this when I watched a trailer. I think focusing on Galadriel is very smart. Great idea. Like, the love of Cate Blanchett as that character kind of drives you to have a really strong tie to her, even though it's a different actress. Like, seeing a younger Galadriel, like, you're like, okay, I know her. I know how awesome she is later. I'm down to see this chapter of her life. Like, I think without that, there would be a little bit less in this trailer to sort of emotionally grab onto. You'd be like, yeah, it looks cool, but I don't know who these people are. But putting her at the center of it and then surrounding her with a bunch of new characters, I think was very, very smart, at least in my reaction to it. And then, you know, I really do love that this is, it's the Peter Jackson, not Peter Jackson universe. Like, you look at the way some of these characters are designed, you look at some goblins, you look at some orcs, you look at some things, and you go, yeah, this is... It's familiar enough, but I'm seeing so many places, so many things, and there's a visual style to it that feels different enough that I feel like I'm getting the old and the new at the same time. So yeah. I literally, like I said, I'm like, I watch that. Like, usually when you get to a final trailer, you know, you like a teaser trailer, you're very confused, you don't know what's going on, and then the final trailer, you're like, oh, okay, so that's the story. Nope, don't know, but I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in as well. I mean, I've been in from the first one, and I've been enjoying this approach to it big time, and now getting even more of Galadriel in this trailer, along with some incredible visuals, sumptuous visuals. You see where the money went, for sure, in the scope of this, as Michael pointed out, all the different places we're going. The scope of it is incredible. And yeah, Morphy Clark coming in here as Galadriel. It's a different Galadriel. This is a warrior Galadriel. This is a Galadriel on a mission. This is a completely different Galadriel than we've seen before. So I like that. We even have Elrond being like, hey, you know what? Calm down. He's like, I'm not calming down. We got things to do. You know, I love that. And it's driven by her brother's death. What's that all about? Vengeance. Revenge? I love me a good revenge movie. Oh, and the revenge is going to be we're going to take it out on Sauron. So I want, but we didn't see much of, we didn't see Sauron at all in this trailer. So very interesting for a final trailer to not have your villain, main villain supposedly in the final trailer. But yeah, Shannon, you're right. This feels like the Fellowship in a different format. And just like The Force Awakens, you know, you're just kind of hitting these notes just to keep people familiar with it. And then showing a different story, just like the House of Dragon, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes here. Same thing. So they seem to have taken a page out of The Force Awakens, been like, if we just have some elements that are familiar but tell a different story, we might be okay. And certainly it feels that way. Plus that reluctant human hero, yet again, feeling a little Aragornish there. We're getting that vibe to it as well. So overall, to me, I'm excited here. Loved the Harfoot moment, you know, that... very similar to The Hobbit. Our hearts are just bigger than everybody else. All that stuff. So great. So everyone is satisfied when we get fucking dwarfs. So I'm in even more so because we got us some dwarfs. So you can have your Harfoots. Just give them a damn dwarf. So I'm 100% excited for this. And as Shannon said, the screenings are selling out. So you better get almost all the screenings in LA and San Diego and San Jose are sold out. There's like, I think... one screening in Marina that still someone has tickets. So y'all need to jump on it if you really want to see this in the theater, because they're offering these tickets for free. So, yeah, go ahead, Shan. Sorry.
You know, I mean, like House of the Dragon, this was the type of show that, based off of the marketing, I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, I mean, it looks cool. We'll see. And, you know, we'll talk about House of the Dragon in a moment. But at the conclusion of the House of the Dragon, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm in. So I'm crossing my fingers that that will be the same situation with the Lord of the Rings. But as Vogel said, it's like, this looks awesome. Yeah. We know who Galadriel is. We know who Elrond is. Outside of that, I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. They look cool. but again, there's no emotional connection, with the exception of Galadriel. And because it isn't Cate Blanchett, because it is a younger actress, it's sort of like, okay, yeah, I have a connection to that character. I don't know you. Like, you look good so far. You look good so far, but, you know, we'll see. And so I think that's kind of, oh my gosh, I was just thinking of a movie quote and it dropped out of my head. But basically, okay. You know, I won't be disappointed, because going in, I'm kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens. You can't be disappointed if you don't get your hopes up. So, and that's...
That sounds like the saddest way to live. Like literally, like, you can't be disappointed if you don't get your hopes up. Well, that is a safe life. I don't know how excited it is.
I am purely speaking about House of the Dragon and the Rings of Power. I'm not applying that, you know, across worldwide.
How you do one thing is how you do all things. That's what I'm saying.
Jesus. Is that what Zendaya said in No Way Home? I don't get my hopes
yes,
up.
Yes, that's that what it was. I'm like, where did I hear that? It was from a movie. Yeah.
Where did I hear that?
I have an MJ approach to these two series. Yes, anything else?
No.
It looked like Vogel wanted to chip away at my character some more.
Yeah, but I decided to cut you a break.
Well, we will find out on September 2nd on Amazon Prime, or August 31st if you manage to get a ticket to one of those Cinemark screenings.
Yeah, I'm going to try to shake some trees and see if I can get into something, man. I want to see these things on the big screen for sure. All right, well, let's take a quick break and we'll jump into our main topic and talk about episode 1 spoiler review for The House of the Dragon here from HBO Max. We'll be right back after this.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.
I think that's the theme.
I know that's the theme.
I mean, he clearly practiced. He clearly practiced.
Fair enough. Let's jump into this thing. This has been burning up the internet. It opened. It had almost 10 million viewers. The highest rated or highest viewed opening debut show for any show on HBO Max ever in its short history, but certainly for HBO Max, pretty cool stuff.
Well, there's not a lot else to watch on it, so, you know.
That's a fair point. That's a fair
and point. There may not be much more history.
That's true. The Heirs of the Dragon here, it dropped very much focus on the House Targaryen. We get King Viserys coming into power. We get Rhaenyra as a teenager. We get Alicent, her friend. We got Otto Hightower, the Hand of the King there, played by Riz Ahrens, a.k.a. Kirk Connors from The Amazing Spider-Man. We get Daemon. We get this sibling rivalry here that is happening between Daemon, is played by Matt Smith, and Viserys. We get this horrible birthing scene that a lot of people have had some issues with on social media, and certainly some of the reviews, especially a lot of the female critics I've been reading about, having issues with the birthing scene. And we get at the end this idea that Rhaenyra is now in line to be the first woman ever to sit on the Iron Throne. So we're very focused on the Targaryens, but we had a lot of table setting for what we're going to get over the next 9 episodes. A lot of houses, a lot of names were spoken, a lot of people pledging loyalty from houses that we've heard about in the Game of Thrones series, and a pretty brutal jousting tournament as well that was happening. So, gentlemen, what are your thoughts on overall, to start off with, on this show? Michael, please take it away.
Well, you know, I mean, it struck me as we were talking about the Lord of the Rings trailer. I mean, this is the balancing act. It's The Force Awakens. It's Lord of the Rings. It's House of the Dragon. It's how do you manage to give me what I want and give me something that feels familiar, but also give me something new? And look, for my money, I think I think they delivered. Like, as we've said, you know, I mean, I think so many of us, and like, you know, Twitter was just golden on Sunday night and Monday morning with all the people and all the memes about like how I said I would never watch a Game of Thrones again after what happened in season 8. And then there's a picture of somebody with like a blonde wig going like, Dracarys, like, let's go, I'm in. Like, and that's kind of how I felt. It's like, I think they, it is a blonde Targaryen who is in line to rule, and there's going to be a lot of problems getting there, and there's a lot of intrigue, and there's a lot of houses who are all talking to each other about a lot of things, and there's a hand of the king that like there, I mean, there's all the pieces that are there, and of course there's a lot of fucking dragons, but like there's all the pieces that are there that are like checkbox, checkbox, checkbox. But as opposed to Game of Thrones, which was really the Starks and the Lannisters and everything else, this felt like Game of Thrones meets Succession. You know, like, ooh, this is very clearly what this is. It's like, well, it could be you, it could be you, it could be someone else. And then when you look at like what's to come, you're like, yeah, this is what I want out of a Game of Thrones show. It's all like the political machinations and the whole who's on whose side and like the spying and the this and the that. And it's like, you know, in the first scene, in that opening scene where they're all at the, you know, they're having the meeting with the king, and everyone's like, oh, well, we got these people in the fields that are doing this, and this guy is taking out these people. And I'm like, this is so many names. I don't know. And then by the end, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm in. Like, who's who? Who's where? So I was into it. The only part that really, as soon as you get to the end and he starts mentioning the prophecy to her about,
yeah,
you know, the person who, what is it? The prince who would be king, or the,
yeah,
what is it? I can't remember.
Yeah. Song of Ice and Fire.
Song of Ice and Fire.
And you get into Song of Ice and Fire, and I started to be like, you're on thin ice. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about Song of Ice and Fire. Y'all fucked me over with that. You can't, no take backsies. Like, that was the part that like started, like the more that they talk about the parts of Game of Thrones that a lot of us feel like they whiffed the ball on, I start to get nervous. But everything else I thoroughly enjoyed.
It's like watching a Lost prequel. Like, just wait till the polar bear shows up. You're going to be ready for the polar bear. Shannon, thoughts overall on this first episode for House of the Dragon? We did the preview last week of what we anticipate, what we expect, what we were hoping for. So how did this one come across for you?
I mean, from moment one, honestly, it grabbed me with that with that prologue. Just setting up. I mean, it was just such a clear world that they're setting up, that you had an aging king whose sons had died. He didn't have a direct heir, and they basically threw it to the people. I mean, they basically had an election of like, who do you want to take over? And despite the fact that you had the more senior child who also was a woman, and then you had the younger child who was a man, and the man got it. And like, they just set up such a great dynamic right off the bat. You know, the characters that we meet, like Graham McTavish as the knight that takes care of Rhaenyra, I was just like, he's one of those actors that you see him and you're on board with him. And I think that we had said last week, like, the strength of this series was going to be based on the characters, because we know the world. We know the world-ish. We know the world adjacent. Like, okay, it's Westeros. Got it. Thus far, the characters that they have introduced are all very, very intriguing. You have a mourning king. You have an ambitious brother. You have a Hand of the King who seems like a good guy, but about halfway through, it's like, okay, maybe Damon's right about you. And that's a great place to be with storytelling, is you don't know, you see everyone's points, but you also see everyone's flaws. So, you know, super enjoyable. I mean, I love the scene between Viserys and Rhaenyra at the end, where he's just kind of like, what do you see? What do you see? So you get the fact that what Damon says is that he's weak. Damon might not be wrong, but he's not stupid.
He's not the best messenger to be telling this, but
sure. But also with Damon, like, you see them at the funeral, and you see this genuine sadness where he's just kind of like, okay, Viserys isn't going to be able to do this. It's up to you, Rhaenyra. Like, you have to give the order to set the pyre on fire. I mean, like, the characters thus far are just so intriguing. To that birth scene, the folks that have an issue with it, man, I 100% get it. Because as a storyteller, that is not, I don't know what that got us. I think you can have the same effect, and you can deliver the same message without going that for me, gratuitously graphic.
Okay.
Again, I don't know what that got us. And like, I get the like, well, it's like, you know, we're watching the tournament, we're watching the battlefield, and then we're watching the battlefield of the birthing bed. Sure. Right. You don't need to see ripping a woman. Like, you don't, for me, you didn't need to see that. I thought that was the one mistake that they made. But again, there are other folks in the audience. That was not an issue. So, right. You know, I'm not saying they were wrong or right. I'm saying for me, it didn't work.
Yeah, I have to. I mean, I dropped my spoiler review yesterday because I finally finished it after writing it for 2 days. There was so much to explore and dive into and enjoy for sure. So I had to kind of pare it down so it wasn't an hour and a half. But I certainly enjoyed the hell out of this opening episode because it immediately got us back into the world and the vibe of the best of Game of Thrones. And that certainly speaks volumes about how well Miguel Sapochnik and I think Ryan J. Condell is it? Yeah, Ryan J. Condell and then George R.R. Martin being involved in this as well kind of worked to bring you back into that world. And like immediately we know it's a patriarchal world right from the opening scene. They chose a dude over his closest heir was a woman. And she even gets dubbed with that terrible, the queen who never was moniker, which is such a dig. Right. But we see her, she's in this relationship. We get a black lord here. That's on the King's Council. That's kind of a new thing to have in Game of Thrones. I love that. An interracial marriage. That's kind of cool as well. Plus Corlys is the one's like, man, I don't need no drink, man. And also Daemon is the guy you said is supposed to be the heir. So we need to focus on Daemon. And I love that they call out Otto with the idea with Otto. You gave him an army, you dumb SOB. So there's a lot of...
That was great.
Right? There's a lot of intrigue and moving pieces and moving elements to this that are very interesting. And, you know, Shannon, I hadn't thought about Daemon being maybe right, even though he's not the best guy to be delivering the message. And certainly we're going to see now with the death of Emma how this affects Rhaenyra's relationship with Viserys. And if this becomes a worm tongue type situation where you have Daemon whispering in her ear, giving her that, you know, necklace of Valyrian steel, very Cape Fear-ish Robert De Niro, Juliet Lewis scene. It was very unsettling. So it's like, okay, what is this? Is this favor? Or is there something more going on here? Is this his way of being with everybody? Plus him going after Hightower's kid and then also wanting favor from Hightower's daughter. What is his move there? Is Alicent going to be going with the king but having a feelings for Daemon? How is that going to play itself out? So there is so much drama here to explore that is going to be fun, I think, as we go along. Michael, swinging back to you, the acting, the direction, the score, what stands out for you when you look at this in entire episode? What are some of the highlights for you?
Well, it's funny, as you were just talking, I think what really stands out to me is the fact that this is what I love about geek culture, is if you're outside of geek culture, you're like, oh yeah, geeks just like this because there's some dragons and there's some special effects and there's some like superheroes with some rocket boosters. But really, what we geeks just are closet soap opera freaks. Like, you know, like as you're sitting here talking, it's like, yeah, like there's some dragons and stuff, but look, who's sleeping with who? And she's with the king, but she really wants this. And what is Daemon up to? And are these two going to get together? And I don't know. And like, that's the shit that we love. And like, this episode gave us that in spades. So I think that's what really stood out. I think the performances were great. I think Matt Smith is kind of a standout because I think that Daemon is going to be one of those characters that we are all going to debate about all season long. Is he the bad guy or is he not? Like, it seems to be setting up, you know, Rhaenyra versus Daemon and these two are like going to vie for the throne and whatever. But I don't think that that's necessarily what's going to happen. I think Daemon may end up being a bit more, there's a Jaime Lannister-ness to this character arc.
Oh,
there's a,
interesting.
You're a dick, you're horrible, you clearly are violent as fuck, but to Shannon's point, he's not wrong about his brother.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that there's going to be a lot of debate about what his motives are, which again, is in keeping with exactly what we love about Game of Thrones. So, you know, I do want to say, just to Shannon's point, about the birth scene.
Yeah.
I am not a woman, and I completely understand, like, Game of Thrones is suffering. Shocking, I know. I'm not a woman. I don't know if you were aware. And so I completely understand people's reaction to that.
Yeah,
I think that Game of Thrones has gone down this road before, in its series of like, did we need this for the story? Did we need this treatment of women in the story? So I'm not defending the moment, and I completely understand why people feel it was gratuitous, and it was a lot. But Game of Thrones in general is built around gratuitousness. I mean, the jousting scene, not woman specific, was also equally as gratuitous. And I do think when it comes to storytelling, and again, I'm not arguing for this, and I do think there probably is a line that we should probably all agree that we don't cross. But I do think what it does get you is part of art is that it really makes you feel. And sometimes those feelings are great, and sometimes those feelings are uncomfortable. And watching that scene, I was intensely uncomfortable. It is a hard, hard scene to watch. But I think there's an argument to be made that sometimes that's called for. Was this one of those times? I don't know. I don't know whether it was or not. And again, if you were a woman watching this and you were like, I did not need that in my life, 1,000% understand that. So I'm not arguing for the scene necessarily, but kind of an overall discussion, which I think is interesting, is I don't think we should always say, well, art shouldn't make me uncomfortable. I think there is an argument to be made that sometimes we need to see it. Now, I think what they thought as creators was this choice that the king makes to choose one over the other, the brutality of that choice, the brutality of what he does. This is a character moment. This is showing how important this heir is to him, and really shows how fucked he was when it didn't go how he thought it was going to go. And we really want the audience to sit with that. Now, again, was that the right choice? Maybe, maybe not. But I do understand their, given what Game of Thrones gives us and its gratuitousness in all ways, I understand how they felt like it fit within their world.
Yeah, within the, and I agree. To me, I didn't have an issue with the scene when I was watching it, but that doesn't mean I haven't understood and felt people's points of views that didn't like it, just like Michael.
And we're all dudes, saying. So it's a whole different thing for us to watch it.
Well, and so are the makers here, right? Ryan J. Condell and Miguel Sapochnik are dudes, and so is George R. R. Martin. So you could argue that where's the women in this creative process yet again? Because it was Benioff and Weiss over on the original Game of Thrones series. So you have to ask yourself, why can't we get more women involved at the higher levels? They might be in the writer's room, but why aren't they at the higher levels in creating these Game of Thrones series? I think there's a definite case to be made there, and that's okay to make that case, okay? But the birthing scene for me worked because, first of all, Sean Brooke acted the fuck out of that scene. She was incredible in that scene. Her screams of terror and horror and pain when she realizes what's happening is devastating.
It's even uncomfortable when you talk about it.
It was ringing in my ears for 2 days afterwards. It was devastatingly so well acted by her, so that you, as the audience member, if the scene doesn't bother you in terms of like it's necessary or unnecessary, if it works for you, that scene affects you and helps you to understand Rhaenyra even more if she starts to turn on her father, because he was willing to sacrifice her mother for some potential male heir that he wasn't even sure was going to be a boy, by the way, just taking a chance here. That's how little he thought of his wife in that moment. And that may be just enough to motivate Rhaenyra to go against Viserys down the road with Daemon's pushing, or Rhaenys's pushing down the road, maybe, because she may want some power. So it was a scene that was supposed to make you feel this way, right? As you said, Michael.
And I think what the argument is and what the discussion is, because I kind of agree with everything you said, except, and again, we are all three dudes. So I'm very curious, particularly like, I'm curious what everybody listening thinks about this, and definitely let us know in the comments. But because I think it's an interesting conversation, because I do think you're right that if there were more women creatively behind the scenes on this, would somebody have said, whoa, hey, everything that you just said, John, about this is how this is going to play into the rest of the season, you can do without this, this, and this. Like, don't show this, don't do this. Yeah. This is too much. You're not a woman. You don't understand. Right. And we would have all still felt those same things. And I do
think,
saw it, like,
in,
again,
in Calliope, in the recent Sandman episode, we saw, if you guys have watched it, we didn't see the rape from the book. We just see the trickle of blood on Richard Maddox's face, and we get the point. Yeah.
And and it's a great point, because when we watched that Calliope, or when I was watching it, I kind of was wondering, like, I knew where it was going because I've read the story, and I know what is going to happen. And I kind of appreciated the fact that they didn't. Yeah. So, you know, like I have two different opinions. I think it's more, I don't have an opinion one way or the other on it. Because I think that in this specific case, in the treatment of women in popular media, I would lean towards what other women felt about it than what think about it. Sure. But I do think it's an interesting conversation, broader than just how women are treated. But like when we do have these super violent, super graphic things, whether it be Game of Thrones, whether it be in other adaptations that we see, you know, how much do we actually need to tell the story? And I think that's what Shannon's point is, which I think there's a valid point there too. Like, did we need this to get it? What did it really serve us to go that far?
Yeah, we've got a few more minutes left. Shannon, what are the highlights for you, or what are the things that gave you pause besides the birthing scene? What else gave you pause, or what are the highlights when you think about this first episode here?
Well, I mean, it's visually stunning. Like, technically, you know, they're knocking it out of the park. I mean, you know, we hear these discussions all the time now about how the artists in the visual effects industry aren't always as valued, that they're kind of up against impossible deadlines. And we've not heard that thus far with this production or Game of Thrones, to my knowledge. And it was nice to see that you do have these incredible visuals with the dragons, with the, you know, the large, you know, sort of cityscape shots. It's great that you can get this incredible product. And at least publicly, we're not hearing that people's backs are up against the wall, which is nice to hear. Performances across the board. Everybody's great. I mean, having to catch up with the new houses that may have been mentioned in Game of Thrones. Like, I was looking for a very specific article. I'm like, who is mentioned in Game of Thrones? Like, I want to know. Like, I know Daemon Targaryen was mentioned in Game of Thrones. I know the Hightowers were mentioned in Game of Thrones. But the performances across the board, awesome. These are all characters that just at first glance, not the problem, but it definitely addressed my concern. Is the characters are what is going to make this ship, you know, sink or swim. Right. And thus far, they seem to be swimming. I thought the action of the tournament was great. Again, because I'm not a fan of gratuitous violence, I don't think we needed to see an axe go into a dude's face. I think you're getting the point that there is a line that is crossed between competition and battle. And ideally, it's a line that is inevitably crossed in every tournament. At least that's what it seems, because Rhaenys's character says that. She's like, and this is when it gets nasty. The moment that Daemon gets sort of knocked off his horse and he's there on the barrier, you know, being dragged. I'm like, that is a great action shot. Like, that's a great visually dynamic shot. Yeah. And the intercutting between that and the birthing scene, I thought was actually really good. I don't think we needed to go as graphic, as I've said, but across the board, I think everything was just really, really good. Now, knowing that they are going to have some sort of a time jump to where Allison and Rhaenyra are going to be a little older, I see the potential for it. I also am just like, man, I really like those two younger performers. Like, I hope we don't lose them too fast, because at this point, watching them grow, especially with Allison's, how she seems like this person's best friend, and now she's put into a position where it's like, okay, now I'm being used to sort of so my dad can maybe curry a little more power with the king. Rhys Ifans is the standout for me. I mean, obviously Matt Smith is incredible. Paddy Considine, incredible. But Rhys Ifans is the one. Ever since we saw Rhys Ifans at the Hall H panel for Amazing Spider-Man, where he was just a hungover rock star. Whenever I see him perform, I'm like, oh my God, you are an incredible performer. Because having seen a little bit of you, like, this ain't you. But across the board, all the performances were great.
Yeah, and I love that we've got a little bit of a buffoon on the council with Lionel Strong. I love Lauren. You need that one buffoon on the council, don't you? You just need that one person to balance everything out. Yeah.
I also think there's something really wonderful, and you guys know this, you know, having been in theater school, but like there's that acting for the rafters, and then there's really subtle acting, and like particularly in those council scenes where everyone is trying to hold their cards so close to their vest that there's a lot of real subtle things where you are like you're seeing someone have a reaction, but then also instantly trying to mask their reaction. And there's like, so it really is, you're right. I mean, like, they really did bring the heat with the visuals, the directing, the music, the performances, like they came to play. Like, and I do think a lot of this is, and you know, for the good is, hey, we're not going to say this, but we know we fucked up at the end there.
Right.
Like we know we've got to win you back and we're going to work extra hard to do it. So we are bringing our A game across the board. And that's how it felt to me. So I'm with you guys. Like I put on my blonde Targaryen wig and hopped on my dog and pretended he was a dragon and said, let's do this thing.
Yeah, and shout out to the two young actresses that Shannon mentioned. Millie Alcock playing Rhaenyra Targaryen and Emily Carey playing Allison Hightower. And like you said, we're going to make this time jump. And it sure looks like Allison becomes the next queen. So how is that going to affect their relationship? Certainly, we've seen stories about dudes who marry their daughter's best friends and how that kind of plays out. You know, there's that great SNL skit where Tina Fey's like, oh yeah, your daughter's gonna love that. So I mean, there's so much intrigue and drama to explore, and Ramin Djawadi's music is fantastic throughout the
always
whole.
Great,
I mean,
always
so
great.
Essential to what we're watching. Certainly another character in the story to give you. Yeah. And of course, as you mentioned, Mike, the brutality. Yeah. You know, as much as we may be on Damon's side, I mean, Damon castrating people, cutting heads off people, doing the horrible things. I mean, there's allusions to where you're seeing someone in charge of a police force administering their own brand of justice with no kind of limit or restriction. And we're being told by them that they are these things. We don't know. We haven't seen these people hurt people, rape people, steal, whatever. We're just hearing from a corrupt police force that
Otto said it too.
Otto says it. Otto, the one who was serving up his daughter to be the king's. I mean, I don't believe anybody on this fucking council.
It is pretty clear that King's Landing is pretty much a slum at this point. I mean, King's Landing is not a good place. So again, I'm not arguing that Damon
is systemic,
correct,
Michael,
in his approach.
Let's go for an hour about whether it's systemic.
Let's do that. Let's talk about it. But I think like Damon. Listen, they open Game of Thrones with Jaime Lannister throwing a kid out of a window.
Yes, right.
And there's no coming back from that. You're a horrible human being. You threw a kid out of the window.
And you're sleeping with your sister.
And Jaime Lannister, and while you're sleeping with your sister. And Jaime Lannister came back from that.
Yeah.
Like Game of Thrones does a really wonderful job of living in that gray. Let me give you a character, and I'm going to put that character in a role and give that character a personality that makes you hate him beyond anyone else. And then I'm going to chip away at that, and I'm going to reveal things, and I'm going to have them grow and change and do things to the point where you're like, oh, I never thought I would be here, and yet here we are. Right. And if they can go do that if they can do that again after what they did with Jaime Lannister before they completely fucked it up in the last two episodes, that'll be great. Like, that's a great journey.
Absolutely. Well, we got to wrap up here as we're out of time here. So, Michael, do you got to go? Do you got to jump
off? No, I'm good. I want to wrap things up.
All right, Shannon, one last, what's your final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm in for the season.
Okay, all right. So all of us have our Targaryen wigs on. We're ready to go to see what happens here over the next 9 episodes. And we will be reviewing the episodes in some form. We're still working that out going down the road. So just we'll update you as we figure that out for ourselves in our very busy schedule. So thank you all so much for watching this episode of the Geek Buddies. We hope you enjoyed every topic we talked about. Shannon, what do we have to tell?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies, on Instagram @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung, on Instagram @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays. I actually guested on a Star Wars podcast last week called Father Son Galaxy. You can find it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
You can find it on all the streaming platforms. Delightful father and son from Philadelphia, Kerwin and Keith. If you have a second, go check it out.
Nice.
Michael? Look, we love talking about geek stuff on the Geek Buddies, and we like talking about the harder topics, too. We love getting into the weird debates. We love getting into the interesting discussions, and we hope that you guys enjoy it. So along those lines, we definitely want to know what you thought about everything today. You know, we want to know what you thought about John Boyega and Star Wars. What do you think of the HBO Max dumpster fire? Lord of the Rings, yay or nay? House of the Dragon, what do you think about the gratuitousness of Game of Thrones? Like, do you think it's too much? Do you think it's appropriate? Like, where do you think that line is? Like, let us know all of that in the comments below. below. We actually love to know what you guys think about this. We love to have some good conversations with you guys as well. Definitely hit the like button on this video so that everybody knows that you liked it. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. Check out all the amazing content that he has got there. If you are listening to us anywhere that you are listening to us, go ahead and leave us some stars and leave us some comments. It helps us go up in the rankings so that more people can find us and join in all the fun. And as always, the best thing that you guys can do, retweet this video, post it on your socials, and tell everybody how much you like hanging out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
Yeah, and big shout out to Carbon Health, who powers and sponsors us here on the Geek Buddies. CarbonHealth.com. You got any questions, concerns, or needs about your healthcare, go and check them out. They've got 80-plus locations in California, 200-plus locations, I believe, all over the country. So you can go there and get checked out in the clinic or get checked out virtually. They offer that as well. They've also got an app you can download. You've got any questions on the go that you need answered for your healthcare, they've got that set up for you as well. They want to work with communities like ours that are uplifting and supportive of people. So that's why they're a sponsor here on the Geek Buddies, and we appreciate them every week. So go check them out at CarbonHealth.com. Or download that app to have a doc in your POC. All right, thank you all so much for joining us here on this episode of the Geek Buddies. Look for our She-Hulk spoiler review coming out in the next couple of days from us, and we'll let you know about it as well. And y'all take care of yourselves. Be well. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of the
Geek
Buddies.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.